Will you take it, Mike?
Let's say hello to David Moore and the great Robert Wolanski. David Moore, greatness himself.
Sunshine.
And the show is called Intentional Grounding.
In my eyes.
And you boys are going to do this every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. And it's going to be a football show, right?
Until further notice on both of those points, I believe. But yes, that's how it's starting out.
I'm excited to listen for many reasons. First, the chemistry of you two. Now, we were gone when you guys filled in for us. You've already done like a four-hour show, right?
We did a three-hour show.
Okay, so this is nothing. Just an hour thing.
Please.
But these guys have known each other since 1974.
Yeah.
And so they have a lot in common. You know, Robert's my age. We're both going to be 43 here pretty soon. He told me that I'm too old to be wearing flip-flops.
You are.
You wear them.
We're not talking about me.
We're talking about you. He gets an exemption.
Why?
You.
Because I can do whatever I want.
What is
you're
it,
too
an old man
it.
Exemption or something
that's
like
right.
that? So when I reach a certain age,
right.
I can go back to it?
That's why you're grandfathered in.
He gets the my hero exemption.
Okay. Yeah. That doesn't make sense.
When you turn 60, you start wearing them again. You'll get to do whatever you want then. But right now.
Look, I don't have this exorbitant clothing budget that the Dallas Morning News and formerly the Dallas Observer paid for or pays for right now.
I've been wearing the same pair of boots for 15 years.
Dude, the amount of shirts that you own, I would shudder to think how much money is invested in that closet of yours.
I buy them all on sale.
God. Those Billy Reed shirts that he owns are like
those
200.
Those I do get on sale.
Like
no. Those are all warehouse sale
okay.
items.
All right.
They're $500 shirts for 33 cents.
That's a hell of a deal.
I got to tell you, the warehouse sale is extraordinary, man.
I have a clothing
budget.
Well,
it sure is if that's what's going on there.
I have a yearly clothing budget.
His flip-flops cost more than my shirts.
Of $35, so I have to use it judiciously. You just whatever. Spend. But again, it's the morning news. It's part of what they pay, right, Dave?
That's why the industry's in such good shape right now.
That's why we're moonlighting at radio when we should be at home. And I believe this actually costs us money to come up here.
Really? You're paying for the time?
I believe we're paying for the parking, certainly.
Okay. Well, that's okay.
Yeah, we're underwriting the show.
At least they didn't hit you up for the hour. So you have to go out there and sell a thing yourself.
David and I are selling. We're selling subscriptions to the paper, and we're selling airtime.
Well, the T-Box does
that. You get a break on one on the other.
Yeah. This will be pop culture related as well, right?
There will be sports and pop culture and all kinds of football related stuff.
Ah, more sports and all that implies on this show.
Well, we're going to deal with over the course of it, and we'll get into this when we start our introduction. But yeah, we're going to talk about football, ball, a great deal.
We want to make people laugh, make them cry.
Good luck.
Maybe have them think a little bit of things in a different way.
No, you don't.
All in each show.
You don't want to do any of that. What you want to do is piss them off.
Yes,
that's what we want to do.
Piss them off.
That's right.
I want to spend much of our 16 weeks together talking about the concussion lawsuits, which I'm obsessed with.
Are you really?
I really am. Many Cowboys, many famous Cowboys, many people we grew up watching are part of that lawsuit.
Yes, they are. That's right, and I believe Ralph Neely is one who joined that.
Yes.
He's on it now?
Yeah.
In the last couple
Neely
weeks.
Is, wow.
Yeah.
Tony Dorsett's on it.
Leroy Jordan is a big player. Mm-hmm. Leroy Jordan has got a lot of stuff with the UT Brain Health Institute. He and Daryl Johnson are a big part of that as well. So we'll have them on during the course of the show, and we'll talk about some other more frivolous things along the way.
Leroy is, he's mentally fine, isn't he? He's all right.
I talked to him the other day.
He's good?
He's still got the lumber business over
okay,
near
good.
Love Field.
Good.
Yeah.
It's good to hear.
He's a fascinating guy, and they have really interesting stories to tell. The studies that are coming out of the Brain Health Institute are intriguing about the rate of depression amongst former NFL players who didn't even know that they were depressed.
It's the one thing that could take the whole shooting match down.
It's going to be riveting to see how this thing plays out.
Significant ramifications down the road.
Gosh.
As you can see, the league already positioning itself by donating, basically giving grants to study this further. And
they're trying to get out ahead of something that they are way behind.
Way behind, yes.
So it's going to be something we will address over the course of the next few months.
All right, we'll hit the theme expo.
Go! Go! Dallas Cowboys!
Thank you.
It has been my dream to bring this back as the official Cowboys anthem. I do not know why to this day the Dallas Cowboys do not use this as their song when so many storied NFL franchises use their original fight songs.
Love it. Love it.
This will be the theme song of Intentional Grounding. I am Robert Wolanski of the Dallas Morning News, DallasNews.com to be very specific. And I am proud to be here on the Ticket Airwaves with my good friend, also of the Dallas Morning News, the Dallas Cowboys beat writer, David Moore.
Ditto.
Was you're proud to be here with
enough?
You?
Yes. I hold myself in high regard, yes.
Thank well, this is very thrilling. This is our first show. It is our soft opening, as they say. So those who are tweeting at me, at Robert Wolanski, who are begging me for this not to be terrible, let me just say up front, I can make no promises. David has tried to be far more professional than I, but this is, after all, his job, his beat, his living, his life, the Dallas Cowboys.
Which there's nothing else in my life, actually.
I'm sure your daughter would, and your wife would greatly disagree.
That's going to go over well on the home front. Thank you.
But David and I are Dallas natives. This is the one and only team that we have grown up loving and watching and being part of. For a few years when I was at the Dallas Observer, I actually covered sports as well, which is where David and I first met, following around the 11-win Dallas Mavericks all those many awful years ago.
Yes, and that's the I still my greatest regret, probably not the teams, but it's much like being in Dallas when you get up to, what, 44, 45 days over 100, when you're that close to breaking the streak. You want to get those extra couple of days in to say you lived through the worst summer in Dallas history. That was the same watching that team. You wanted them to desperately break the record of 9 wins. And not only did they not break it, they finished with a 2-win flourish at the end to get up to 11.
That's right. And that's where we met during we did a lot of hand-holding and drinking during those miserable days. And here
that
we
led
are.
To other things, which we won't get into at the moment.
Well, it led to this, which is Intentional Grounding. This was, you know, Danny Bayless and I, a couple of weeks ago in the orphanage, talked about bringing back my late-night music program. I believe Jeff Catlin misunderstood me and said, you know, you and...
Which isn't unusual.
You and David should do a Cowboy show together. So we decided that that would be the thing we would do, and we're going to try to do it a little differently than just talk X's and O's, although David has many, many statistics and other facts at his disposal.
And I will read them nonstop in the second segment.
But we're also going to try to do something a little different in as much as that as we progress over these next 16 weeks, we'll also deal with things as Cowboy-related popular culture, whether they be there are 3 Dallas Cowboy-related books coming out during the course of the season. We will have each of the authors of those on. And as a matter of fact, in our third segment tonight, we will have a very special guest who has been the subject of much debate, discussion, and controversy and so forth over the last week since he was espied on national television doing something quite...
You may not know him, but you certainly know about him at this point.
Yeah, we'll just tease it for now, but I think you can probably figure out who we mean. I'm having a hard time reading his name because my glasses are a bit smudged. But we will get to him shortly, so we look forward to that. But I guess let's begin here, David. We don't have much
Please.
Time. An hour goes by very quickly, as you and I
so
discovered.
So fast.
When we did this a few weeks ago together, filling in for the hard line. You know, we've now introduced the show. And I don't want to make, you know, this is going to be on Wednesday, so it's going to be at a very interesting time for most of the games, because we'll sort of come right in between a game that will have been played and one that we are anticipating.
And this show will morph. Some weeks we will look ahead more. Some weeks we will look at trends. Some weeks we will look behind, because that game was just so compelling.
Well, obviously we began a week ago with a very compelling game. And
yes.
We will, over the course of the next few months, really sort of pull out and discuss and have
talk only about that game.
Well, we'll have conversations with our guests about the storylines that emerge over the course
sure.
of the season. And you spending every single day at Valley Ranch and spending so
every
much time
waking
amongst
moment.
The Cowboys, thinking, drinking, and bleeding,
where am I not there?
Bleeding silver, gray, and blue. I am fascinated by something you wrote today.
I don't hear that often, so go ahead.
Well, I know the feeling. It is a... This was a piece that ran on the front page of Sports Day in the Dallas Morning News, the finest newspaper in all of the Southwest. It was, an even keel is essential. Win over Giants is big, but it's still only one stop in a long journey. And the gentleman has come here to collect the trash, so I was going to give him this piece. But
I'm going to
read from it.
That story should be in it. Yeah, he's trying to take it from you.
I'm going to read from it instead. Because you and I have had this discussion over the last few weeks about how neither one of us is much of a knee-jerk kind of guy. One game does not define a season.
No.
Nevertheless, you wrote today that you believe that the victory over the New York Giants 1 week ago today was a game that very much does define where this team is headed, where this team has gone, and what you believe this team is capable of. You singled out a few players in specific to address, one of them being, of course, Brandon Carr, which is one of the biggest offseason signings in the Dallas Cowboys. You write that Carr came into this league as a fifth-round pick from a small school. It doesn't matter how much money the Cowboys gave him. It doesn't matter what he achieves. Carr will never lose that chip on his shoulder pads. He is driven. He's an overachiever who will always play with an edge. And I'm curious, over the course of spending time with him, what you've come to know about him and what it is about his makeup and those discussions that you have had with him that leads you to believe that this particular player, this very significant offseason acquisition, is in fact a guy who is as you define him.
Well, this is the way you just described him there. I would also argue is the profile that Jason Garrett has on the sort of player he wants to bring into this organization. He wants to, and in his own words, Carr considers himself a late bloomer. He went to a Grand Valley State. None of the big schools were really interested in him. So right from the start, it was something, okay, I believe I can play at that level. You didn't show me any interest. I'm sticking with Grand Valley State and show you what I can do. Constantly at every step along the way, he comes into the NFL, fifth-round pick, too small, small school. What can you really expect from him? Starts his first year. That's not enough either. So he continues. Everything to him is an obstacle or a slight to overcome, which gives him, this is another favorite Jason Garrett word, which we'll use often on the show, and you'll hear him use often, demeanor. He has an edge, a demeanor to him that no matter what he accomplishes, he still hasn't accomplished enough because he knows the perception is that this guy, yeah, he's nice. He's had a nice career. But now, is he really a Darrell Revis sort of player? So this is the sort of player who continually puts goals in front of himself. No matter what he achieves, it's not going to be enough because he's a super achiever, if you will. And certain athletes are motivated this way. Their psyches, this is their temperament. This is how they succeed. This is the edge that they feel they need over other athletes. And Brandon Carr has this, and in many ways, I think he symbolizes what Jason Garrett wants this team to be.
Well, you know, if I were just tuning in and heard you using that description, I would think you were talking about Tony Romo in some ways, which brings us to my next question. Because you wrote, right after Brandon Carr, you discussed the fact that Tony Romo, the level of trust the coaching staff has in Romo, is as high as it's ever been. The faith teammates have in number nine has grown as he has matured into the position. A few days ago, he called up into this very station, the Hardline, had a very wonderful conversation with them, where the discussion of maturation certainly was a significant part. Anyone who thinks of him or talks about him in the same way that you talked about Brandon Carr, a guy with a great deal to prove, perhaps now more than ever. Is this something that you have gotten from him over your course of spending time with him, especially in these last few months, heading into this season where he knows that this window begins to close?
He's very much the same as we're talking about Brandon Carr, and there are other players that we will continue to talk about not only today but over the course of the season that fit this profile as well. I will say there are more and more of them because that's what they're looking for. These are some defining characteristics and traits that Jason Garrett wants in his team. But I was amused a little bit last week because so much of the discussion, and I understand it, was this Tony Romo's best game? What he did against the New York Giants, is that the best game of
Chris
his
Collinsworth
career?
Said as much during the broadcast.
And that's another that sparked it, and it's a good debate to have. I would go back to, and part of the reason I believe you should alter your expectations on what you had on this team before the Giants game, since that game now, the reasons I believe you should set the bar higher is it was not just this one game that Tony Romo had. Let's go back to that pick six meltdown he had against Detroit last year at home, where they lost that game, a game they should not have lost, a game if they would have won, I'm firmly convinced they would have been a playoff team because of the momentum it would have built at that point. But from that game through the New York Giants game, Tony Romo has 27 touchdown passes and only 6 interceptions. He has not had a game with more than one interception over the last 13. So I believe you see Tony Romo building from that point on. So I didn't just look at the game in the Meadowlands and go, wow, Tony Romo had a good game. I looked at it and went, you know what? This guy has altered his game since Detroit. He's mature enough now to know how to go about it and to duplicate it game in and game out. He manages this game better than he has in the past, but is still able to be true to himself. Another phrase Jason Garrett has is, let Romo be Romo, which I believe he stole from the West Wing on let Bartlett be Bartlett, but that's another issue. And you saw it in that game. He had the one interception, but he made very good decisions overall. He made a lot of plays by buying time after the pocket collapsed with his mobility, but it was a controlled mobility, and he didn't put the ball at risk. And that's something you didn't see him do earlier in his career. That's why the coaching staff has more trust in him now. That's why his teammates have more trust.
You know, we talked about the fact that we are not knee-jerk kind of guys, that this is not a game that we use to define what we think the season's going to be. Nevertheless, one cannot help but watch that game the other night, knowing what we knew last season about DeMarco Murray, knowing that he was capable of so much until that season-ending injury. He alone raises your expectations in some ways for what this team is capable of, doesn't he? Because he can make up so many shortcomings of that offensive line.
Hey, he makes Tony Romo a better quarterback. He makes Jason Garrett a better play caller, and he props up an offensive line that before that game against the New York Giants had never all been on the field together to take a snap as a unit until the first snap of that game. And then it lasted for three snaps, and your starting center and Phil Costa goes out, and you sub in Ryan Cook, who 1 week earlier was snapping the ball for the Miami Dolphins in the final preseason game. DeMarco Murray, to me, because I think it was very clear by the end of last season, a lot of the Romo critics who said you can't win with Romo, I think they finally understood that, no, you can win with Romo, but you need something else around him. His level of performance last year was not the reason the Cowboys did not make the playoffs. And now what you have with DeMarco Murray is, again, I'm not just looking at that 131 yards he had in the opener. I'm saying, in the eight games now that DeMarco Murray has been with the Cowboys from start to finish as the featured back, that takes out the New York game last year where he went out after five carries with a fractured ankle. You take the last eight games that DeMarco Murray has emerged in this offense. Four of the eight, he has rushed for more than 130 yards. His average in those eight games is 116 yards rushing. He gives this team a dimension it has not had since Emmitt Smith. We're not saying he is Emmitt Smith yet, because that has to do with consistency
and
durability and longevity, which still remains to be seen. So don't put the cart before the horse here, as they say. But he gives them that potential, and you saw it in their offseason moves. It's a bigger offensive line now. All these moves weren't just about being Romo-friendly. They were about getting good run blockers in front of DeMarco Murray and letting him get to work.
So, a week ago, we discussed the fact that you had picked this team to go 9-7. Before we go to break and come back to discuss the game ahead of us, are you going to now change your predictions for where this team is going to be, 9-7 or otherwise?
I'm not that fickle, but I would have it 9-7 with the arrow pointing up. And I truly do believe with this win in the opener now, they're about to play two teams here. And Jason Garrett, forgive us. We know you don't look ahead, but we do. And with Seattle this week and Tampa Bay after that, those are two teams that they beat in the final 9 weeks of last season, I believe by a combined score of something like 54-28. Dallas is better than they were last year. I don't necessarily know that Seattle and Tampa Bay are appreciably better than they were at that stage. They should win the next two games to get to 3-0, and then let's see how they handle, because then they have a Chicago and then a Baltimore coming in.
Well, when we come back, we will talk about the Seattle Seahawks. We'll talk about what happened at the ranch today. Or it's quite possible we will have been replaced by the big black Cowboys computer. We'll see what comes up next here on Intentional Grounding. It's 7:35 here on the ticket, the first night of Intentional Grounding. I am Robert Walonski of DallasNews.com, and I am joined by Dallas Cowboys beat writer for the Dallas Morning News, my friend David Moore.
Hello.
Hi, Dave. It's good to see you. Where David and I are transfixed by the NFL Network running an old interview with Roger Staubach and Phyllis George. And you were saying that you went to...
One semester at North Texas State, I had the Phyllis George scholarship. So she paid for one of my semesters at school.
I had a Phyllis George poster in my bedroom as a young
man. I believe that's something different. I believe this takes it in a different direction.
It might, but a more ticket-friendly direction, perhaps.
Ticket appropriate. Yes.
Coming up in our next segment, and look, if you're listening to our show right now, it's because you're
and how
not,
could you not be?
You're not watching the Rangers game. You're not watching Roger Staubach being interviewed in 40-year-old footage.
You blew off your kid's football practice or soccer practice.
Speaking of that, in about 14 minutes, we will have a very special guest phoning in from his son's football practice. So I'm very excited about that. But we are going to look forward now to the... next game of the season, the 3 o'clock kickoff against the Seattle Seahawks. Now, this is, before we get to that, there are a few housekeeping items we probably should take care of. Some news out of Valley Ranch today. Let's begin with the news that TC, our estimable producer in there, provided for you during the ticket ticker. He is working many, many jobs at this very moment.
Diligently.
So, Tyron Smith. He was a fine, but he was fined for a horse collar. But he's
speaking
going to appeal
of it cleaned. Yes, yeah, that's an automatic. He will appeal it, and he will lose the appeal. That is just how the process goes in the NFL. Fined $15,750 for the horse collar tackle on linebacker Michael Bowley after the interception that kept him out of the end zone and allowed the defense to flex its muscles with a goal line stand. He said while he was not surprised. It to be fined for that play, he expected to be fined. He was surprised by the amount of the fine when he opened the letter from the NFL office. But he said,
"But that's not a surprising fine. I mean, that's
no.
Horse collar is a very significant, serious infraction as far as the league is concerned.
In fact, if he thinks this one is big, he does not want to do it again because under the new collective bargaining agreement, the second horse collar fine against an individual jumps up to $32,000 and something. So he would notice that one even a little bit more. My guess is that would make, after you get one, you would think about making the other. That number would flash through your mind as you're making the play. But to his credit also, too, he had many opportunities to say he would pass the hat and have the defensive guys take up money from them to help pay his fine. But he said it was his mistake. He's going to live with it, and he should pay for it.
Now, is that normal, a guy thinking that his teammates should help him, or would other Do other players do that?
No, and some would. I mean, some would go up, but it was interesting.
That seems awfully, like, not a really good way to endear yourself to your teammates.
No, it's not. It's
not like he's getting paid, you know, in quarters and dimes. He's getting a substantial amount of money to play professional football.
Yes, he is. And that's why I think the guys talk about it in the locker rooms, but they all understand plays are going to happen over the course of the game. If you have to take one for the team and pay for it yourself, that's what you do because that's what teammates do. As Anthony Spencer said, you know what? I'm going to pat him on the back, say thank you again so much for giving us the ball down there and letting us have a chance to stop them, but I'm not going to help you pay it. And his stance was, my belief is if I get a late hit on a quarterback, I doubt that Tyron Smith or any of the offensive players will offer to help me pay for it.
Right.
So, All men for themselves in this issue.
Mike Jenkins will be back?
He will be back, as he will tell you. He doesn't know what, if any, role he will play in the game because him and the coaches aren't really talking a whole lot these days.
Is it really uncomfortable in the locker room when you're around Jenkins? I mean, somebody said to him today during the press grouping that that Jerry said you had a great practice. And he gave that look, that laugh, that said, "Oh, he did he?"
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like their relationship is necessarily that warm at the moment.
No, there's a bit of a passive aggressive dynamic, if you will, between the Dallas Cowboys and Michael Jenkins at the moment. You know, he says basically, there's really, as far as, well, are you going to play? What role are you going to play this weekend? And he says, well, I will play, but there's really no communication with me and the coaches, so I'm not sure exactly what the role will be. You know, he talked about how he doesn't have any bitter feelings, that he does say that feuding ain't going to do nothing for me or anything for the team. And he made a point of saying that, you know, I smile when I'm around the players. I don't think he does a lot of smiling when he's around management and the coaching staff, but you know, it didn't play in his favor. He didn't have a lot of leverage the way things broke down. It's not just him. Any player in his position would have been treated the same way, and the Cowboys want him, one, because coming off that shoulder surgery, you can't get close to equal return on what he is from a talent at this standpoint. And two, corners get hurt in this league. You know, Morris Claiborne was hurt early in camp and missed some games early. You suddenly lose Brandon Carr or Morris Claiborne for a game or two. You really want to have Mike Jenkins to put in there as a starter and keep Orlando Scandrick in the slot role, which he does pretty well.
If we see much of Jenkins, we'll already be in trouble, don't you think?
I think the way this breaks down, and it's interesting because they're talking about, well, we're going to work him inside so we can get some slot experience. We're going to use him on special teams, and he was out on special teams today in coverage. Those are two areas that he does not particularly do well. In fact, he has never played inside. And his build, and we talked about demeanor, I don't know that his build and his demeanor really lend itself to him being a tough-nosed inside corner where it's a lot more physical, a lot more traffic. I think his skill set is better suited to the outside.
Well, going back to what we were talking about in the first segment, he has the antithesis of the demeanor that Garrett talks about quite frequently. He is not a Carr. He's not a Romo. He's not a guy who has something to prove. He is a guy who just wants out.
And his contract is up at the end of this year, and both sides will probably be able to satisfy that goal.
So injuries?
Injuries. You had Gerald Sensabaugh, who was limited in practice today after suffering, they won't call it a concussion.
Why not?
They call it a concussion-like symptom.
Right, I have the flu-like symptoms.
Yeah, flu-like symptoms, and it usually tends to be the flu, right. Yes. He was limited in practice. The one that raised a few eyebrows was DeMarcus Ware was limited in practice with a hamstring. The guys who did not go, Phil Costa did not go. He won't play this weekend. Matt Johnson, who the rookie draft pick, who we haven't seen anyway, won't be there. Jay Ratliff did not practice today with a high ankle sprain. I would say he as well is questionable or doubtful for this weekend.
So speaking of this weekend, we're facing the Cowboys are facing a team that they have beat three of the last four seasons, 34-9, and quite handily, 34-9 in 08, 38-17 in 09, and 23-13 last year.
Average of 18.7 points in those three games.
You just figured that out in your head as I read
just
those.
Did
Man,
that
you were a genius.
Math has always been one of my strong suits.
I got into journalism because there was very little
because
math.
Because they're math, yes.
So do you? I assume, I mean, obviously this is a fairly stout Seahawks defense. Given what we saw from the Cowboys, as we discussed, our expectations being what they are, do you assume that this will be a similar outing, or many folks are predicting a substantial blowout? But I can't see it that way.
I wouldn't see a substantial blowout, and it's 23-13 in Cowboy Stadium late last year, and Seattle scored after it was 23-6. They scored, I believe, in the final 6 minutes of the game to get it to a 10-point game. It did not have the feel of a 10-point game.
Right.
I would expect the same. You know, they're a very good defensive team, very solid defensive team. There have been more pre-snap false start penalties called in games in Seattle than any other place in the league since 2005. And as you may remember from the New York Giants game, the Cowboys had some issues with pre-snap penalties and false starts in that game. So I think from that standpoint, it's going to be competitive. But Russell Wilson is a third-round pick who will be making the second start of his NFL career. Sidney Rice, their best receiver, didn't practice today with a knee. Their left tackle, Russell Okung, didn't practice with a knee issue today. I just believe that Seattle is too limited offensively to threaten Dallas and win this game over the course of the game. I think they can keep it close going into the second half, but I just don't see that they have the offensive firepower to stack up with Dallas, and I think that's where they lose the game.
You know, before we go to break, the ticket no longer carries the Jason Garrett Wednesday press conference, but he said one thing in the press conference that it was very short and intrigued me in as much as that this morning on the drive into work, I heard George and Craig talking about the 2007 playoff game. Could have been, should have been, looked like it was going to be the first Cowboys postseason victory in quite a while. Romo's first year. It was a very exciting moment, yes. But obviously yes. A muffed punt and a stretch from the goal yep. line, mm-hmm. the muffed hold, and it just did not go their way. Seems like a million years ago.
It is.
My son was, you know, barely walking at that point. Now he's smarting off to me any chance he can possibly get. It really seems like it happened forever ago. And yet we still talk about it like it has any amount of relevancy whatsoever. Garrett was asked about that at his press conference today. I'd like to hear what he had to say very briefly about that.
When you got here in 07, the Cowboys came out for a pretty significant loss to the Seahawks in the playoffs and Tony with the bobbled snap. Was there any rebuilding of a psyche you had to do with Tony? Did you ever think that affected him when you first got here at all?
Boy, that seems like a long time ago. And, you know, one of the themes that we have with our team, and they hear me say this probably 100 times a day, is you got to move on to the next one, the next play, the next drive, the next game, and certainly games that happened 6 years ago. So, you know, we're way on to the next one in regards to that.
So do what is it about sports writers that live so distantly in the past that a game that happened 6 years ago might have any bearing on a team where most of the players weren't even here at that particular point?
Well, Robert, when you when you say it that way, it sounds like quite the indictment.
You said you wanted to spar a little bit. I was just trying to spar a little bit.
I agree. At this moment, it is not significant. When you're looking back at the forks in the road that an athlete's career takes and how they respond to that, how he responded from that initially, I think, is significant and interesting. And to me, this is where, and let's talk about it. I mean, they haven't been back to Seattle since. You need a hook. Seattle's not that sexy of a team. So that's going to be the hook. It's going to be the bobbled snap.
Well, we have a great hook coming up
for our next
segment. I want to make sure we get there with plenty of time to spare. Coming up next, a man that we're both dying to talk to here on Intentional Grounding. Welcome back to Intentional Grounding. I am Robert Wolanski of DallasNews.com, and I am joined by my good friend David Moore of Sports Day DFW, DallasNews.com, and many other ventures.
That's me.
That's you. All right, let's get right into it. We have teased a very special guest, and we're going to bring on now a very special guest because a week ago tonight, the gentleman that we have on the phone was just basically the really, really handsome guy sitting behind Jerry Jones.
Handsome devil. Thrust into the public spotlight.
He was just a handsome son of a bitch sitting behind the owner of the team.
What other way can you say
like
it?
Like intentional grounding right there.
I believe I've just been flagged for offsides.
Yes, you have.
But of course, in due time, we came to know him briefly, or America did, as the man who was cleaning Jerry's glasses. Then, of course, we found out who it was. It was, of course, Shai Anderson, Jerry's son-in-law. That said, up until a few days ago, you really hadn't talked about any of this until our colleague at the Morning News, Alan Peppard, got you on the phone to discuss Jerry Wipes, which until moments ago, I still thought were going to be a facetious offering. But if you go to shopcowboys.com at this very moment for $2.99, you can actually buy Jerry Wipes as an online exclusive. That's phenomenal. Congratulations, mazel tov. And if I'm not mistaken, the proceeds go to the Salvation Army. Is that right, Shai?
That's correct. You know, Charlotte, which is my wife, is Jerry's daughter. And, you know, she's the first chairwoman of the National Salvation Army. And so, you know, anytime you have an opportunity like this to make the public really recognize that the Salvation Army and what they do and be able to redirect money that really just kind of happenstance because of something that was just caught on television. And as I look at it, it was the world's reality TV window into our suite, and they took it all out of context.
Well, it's funny because I was watching the game on television. David obviously was there, so he was not. But as I was watching it, I turned to my wife and said, should I screen grab that? Because hey, apparently I wasn't.
You were the only one that thought that, and there was thousands of others that did. I guess TiVo makes it easy to rewind it and take a picture because my phone literally blew up.
Well, I wanted to ask you, at what point, I assume immediately, you discovered the fact that you had become a national sensation?
Yeah, but I didn't think of it that way because, you know, at the time it was just, you know, doing a favor for, you know, somebody that you love and care for, that it was so in tune to what he was doing. He really didn't pay attention to the little things. And, And it never struck me as something out of bounds. I mean, I've opened doors for him. I've you know, fetched drinks for him, but you never think about that because, I mean, when you work in a publicly traded company, which I did, you do those things for your boss. Some people might call it brown nosing, but it's just kind of how it is.
I carry my father-in-law around on my back whenever I see him. It's just something he expects.
My father-in-law didn't expect that, and he doesn't expect me to clean his glasses, but it's something I don't mind doing.
Chai, what sort of, I mean, in the last few days have you had, what sort of response have you gotten since then? Do you have people come up jokingly and hand you their glasses now? What sort of comments are you getting? What has that been like?
What I've recognized now is I didn't think I was recognizable. But everywhere I've gone, I've had somebody, and I don't know their name, but somebody has come up and said, "Hey, man, I saw your deal on television, and that's pretty cool, and, you know, I'm glad you're turning it into a positive." And, you know, I mean, some of my real good friends, and I'd give John Bon Jovi a shout-out. He says, "I cannot believe they put them on the television, and I'm sure you're catching a lot of grief for it." You know, and I said, "I am." And I said, "But it's not that big a deal." Then I have other guys. I'm sitting up at lunch, actually yesterday, and I had a guy that I've never seen before in my life, walked up, took his glasses off, and stood there and cleared his throat. And I reached in my pocket, pulled out my little wipe, cleaned his glasses off, and he goes, "Oh, man, you're the greatest." And Trail walked off. He goes, "I'm telling everybody about this." And it was, you know, and again, it's kind of that's somebody's touch, you know, to Jerry or the family or the Cowboys. And, you know, it's such a novelty, and it's neat in a sense. I mean, it's funny that the world has taken that, and it's been the most tweeted about item all last week. It's been the most talked about. I mean, your show, other shows, everybody's talking about, because everybody has an opinion on, were the glasses really dirty? Is that my job? You know, what else do I do? I mean, and it's kind of funny because I start laughing, thinking, "Wait a minute, I wonder if I'm expected to do some of those things and I didn't know it."
So as over the course of the last few days, as you decide to make this an actual item, you know, it's gone national. Initially, it went nationally is this funny thing. Now there was Alan's piece in the morning news yesterday gets picked up. The Christian Science Monitor did a huge piece that has been all over the place as well, talking about how you've turned this novelty viral video into something actually very significant and turned it into quite a positive. How difficult has that been in terms of getting these things manufactured and getting them on the website? And
it's
deciding
a quick turnaround, yeah.
I mean, this is an extraordinarily fast turnaround. The guys haven't even played a second game yet.
You know, we're in that world of marketing and, of course, memorabilia, and we have the Dallas Cowboys Pro Shop on shopcowboys.com that has everything you could ever want, you know, to order from a Cowboys perspective. And so that part of it wasn't that hard. I think what caught me more by surprise, and I used it both as a positive and then as kind of an instructional piece for my kids, was the magnitude of attention that it got on something that was so simple. And, you know, with my children, I was saying, just think if I had been doing something bad, you know, what that would have been like. And I said that to them because they're in that age of making the right decisions. And, you know, because, you know, we are involved with the Dallas Cowboys and they are the grandkids of Jerry Jones. I mean, it's going to be bigger than it should be in the media. And then on the flip side, because, you know, this whole new media is so different to us. You know, I run our media for Papa John's and Dunkin' Donuts and some of our other companies. And you know, when you go back over the years and we measure the impressions on the commercials and kind of the success, and then we look at everything that comes with the business on, you know, what did our sales do when the actual commercial aired. This last one that we did was the Jerry Wrapping commercial. And the Jerry Wrap blew away any of our best ones. And, of course, I thought the best one was the Dancing Jerry. But it blew it away almost 12-1 so far, and we're just a few weeks into the campaign. But my point to that is we get our media and we get attention to products so differently than we've ever done in the past. So somebody can tweet about it. It can be written in Alan Pepper's column, and then everybody picks it up, and the next thing you know, it's the most talked about thing in the world, which is crazy.
How long before you or someone started going, "Hey, let's turn this into something. Let's use this tremendous force out there and turn this around quickly and do something with it"?
Well, you know, it was never about turning around quickly and do something with it. It's like, why is everybody paying so much attention to this item at first? And then, you know, of course, we joked internally on, "Boy, Jerry's probably going to call you 5:30 in the morning and say, 'Boy, go get me a sponsor for this eyeglass thing in the car.'"
And he didn't? And he didn't make that call?
I'm not even going to go down that path. But, and then when you saw the attention it was getting, it was like, everybody wanted it. I mean, I had friends in South Africa calling me going, hey, man, can you send me a couple of those? And I'm like, really? And then you got friends in New York. I've got friends in the media. They're all going, when can I get one? And so I went back to Bill Kriakas, who runs all of our merchandising, and said, can you produce these? And he said, I'll have them up on the website by Tuesday. And so, you know, we got it all rolling, and we launched it today. So
they just went on sale. Actually, moments before we went on the air, moments before we began talking, they could not be any newer on the website, shopcowboys.com, right?
That's right. And then, you know, it's just, you got two of them. You've got the standard Cowboys, it's a microfiber cleaning cloth, and you've got the Jerry White. And, you know, people make fun of it however they want to, but as long as they buy it, all the proceeds are going to the Salvation Armies, and it's their back-to-school initiative where they do the screening for kids coming back to school to make sure that their eyes are, you know, okay, and help them, you know, read and see the chalkboard.
Well, that's phenomenal. I cannot congratulate you enough on being able to turn something so weird and what I would have initially thought so insignificant into something that is actually quite beneficial to a bunch of kids who really, really need it.
Well, I will tell you this. You asked me how it's been approached by me. I know that Jerry has been approached by numerous people. And, you know, just with Mickey Spagnuolo tonight doing his show, they were talking about cleaning his glasses on the set. And Jerry, as good and as gracious as he is, threw his foot up on the table and said, you know, those things, my son-in-law cleans the shoes with those too, you know. And, of course, it got laughter for everybody. And you know, you got to have fun with some of this little stuff because there's a lot of stress in the life we live. So let's sit back and enjoy it. But I do want to clear a point that I heard on Dunham and Miller this morning. They were talking about Jerry's glasses being smudged, and is he too senile to not know that his glasses are smudged? Anybody that's been around Jerry knows that he is so intense and so in tune with what's going on with the Dallas Cowboys on the football side. There's not anything that he doesn't miss or you're going to hear about it. And so when he asked me, where's Witten, it wasn't so much as, I don't see Witten. He just wanted to know where he was lined up on the field. And so at that point, I just happened to have the angle sitting behind him and saw that his glasses were severely smudged. Mind you, we've been in meetings all day long. And, you know, he had kept his glasses in his hands because he doesn't need them to talk to you. He just needs them to see far away or to read up close. And so I said, just give them to me. I'll clean them up for you. And I did. And he literally turned and said, and you didn't catch any of this on television, but he said, thanks. I can't believe that I can actually see. And he kind of chuckled because it didn't occur to him that his glasses were that perfect. Dirty. He was so into what he was doing.
John, I assume, too, this has got to be, like you say, you've turned this quickly into a wonderful thing for Salvation Army and kids in this area. I've got to think this is such a small moment. With all the time you spent with Jerry in the suite, you have much better stories and much more interesting stories in that one moment that you could tell, don't you?
The better of the stories, which, you know, doesn't mean much to anybody, is when I cleaned his glasses is the moment in time that everything started turning around for us. We score a touchdown. The momentum shifts. Everything starts smoking. And so now we're looking at that as, is that our good luck charm? And, you know, there's some of them, and I'm not going to say who it is. It's very superstitious. So I wouldn't doubt if they're going to be asking me to sit around and clean some glasses the next two ball games.
Well, we will keep an eye on that. Hey, Shai, thanks for joining us
really
on our very
it.
First episode of Intentional Grounding. I know you're at practice. You've got your own life to live. And, man, I really, again, congratulations. If you go to shopcowboys.com, there's Jerry Wipes and Cowboy Wipes.
$2.99 goes to a good cause.
Salvation Army.
Yeah, $2.99. And I appreciate you having me on. And, again, it's for a good cause, and this has all been fun.
Excellent. Thank you very much, sir.
All right, you guys take care.
Thanks, you too. So that brings us to the end of our first episode, David.
I cannot
thank Shai enough for coming on, and I cannot thank our colleague at the Morning News, Alan Pepperd, for helping get him.
Setting that up, yes. Very, very appreciative of that. And
all for a good cause, much like Intentional Grounding will be every night, every Wednesday night from 7 to 8.
It just may seem like every night to some people.
to those who stuck around, thanks.
Thank you very much.
That's not a threat, but we will be back next week at 7 o'clock. David, thanks again for doing this.
No, thank you, Robert.
No, thank you.
No, you.
Until next week, I'm Robert Wolanski.
I'm David Moore, and TC.
And thanks, TC. And TC's up next with the top 10, yes? I believe it's going to consist of an hour of intentional grounding. So, thanks.